trying to
By
add
the
different
way,
things.
I think you just made a mistake, Andy.
Why?
You didn't ask me your question.
Oh, crap.
I just realised that.
Oh, crap, yeah. I was too busy looking at the time. Oh, well. Well, what I'll do, I'll edit it out so it just sounds like we just asked one question. Retro Asylum, this is episode 2. I'm your host, Andy. I'm not calling myself the real local maniac because it doesn't sound right. So yeah, my name's Andy Godoy. I'm your host for today, and with me is
Glenn 83100.
Yay!
Hello,
Glenn
everybody.
How are you, buddy?
Oh, I'm fine, Andy. I'm fine. I never thought I'd be back doing a podcast with you again.
Yeah, technically, Glenn, we've got to admit, this is the second time we've recorded episode 2.
Yes, it is, but somehow it got lost somewhere.
It did get lost. Basically, what happened with my computer, it got a virus, and I got this horrible blue screen, and then I spent ages trying to fix it.
Oh, no.
And then I had to reset it back to an earlier stage. And to be honest with you, Glenn, I don't think that other podcast we'd done anyway was necessarily that good, because it was mostly my fault, because I hadn't planned anything, and we were just making stuff up. So it was just me and you talking, basically.
Anyway, Andy, what have you been up to since we last been off air?
Right, so, okay. Now, since then, the site is up. The Retro Asylum is up. So, guys, if you want to be a retro maniac, you can find us at retroasylum.com. What do you think of that, Glenn? Nice and short and simple?
Oh, very nice and short and simple. It's a lot shorter, 1HMPS.
Well, technically, that was short for 1 hour monthly podcast show.
Oh,
I can't believe I chose such a long, stupid name. And I think this is more appealing, just Retro Asylum. And the tagline is, we're mad about games, or retro games, I should say.
We certainly are.
Exactly. So let me tell you what's been happening with me, Glenn. Now, this is a bit sad. It's not gaming related. I accidentally broke my cat's leg.
How did you do that?
Well, my cat, basically, we let them out and about, you know, into the garden. And I went to see, it was about 11 o'clock at night, I went to see if they were out there so they could come in, and I opened the door, didn't realise that the poor little thing was standing right behind the door, and I heard a little squeak, and then she ran off, and I'm like, oh God, maybe I hit her with the door, and then later on she came in, and she was hobbling. So,
expensive vet bills coming.
Glenn, let me tell you a short story about what actually happened. So we rushed her to the vets. And they said, oh my God, yeah, she's got a really broken leg. We'll keep her overnight. They called us in the morning. They said, right, we need to operate straight away because it's in such serious condition. We've taken x-rays and it needs to be done ASAP. And we were like, okay, but before we do that, tell us how much it is. And guess how much they said they were going to charge us for it, Glenn?
Go on, Andy.
Go on, give us a number. Tell us what you think. It's a ridiculous amount. Well,
I probably will say 130 quid.
Woo-hoo-hoo, I wish.
Go on, Andy.
All right, you're going to get shocked out of your life. £2,000.
What?
£2,000, yeah.
£2,000?
Yeah.
I said, I'm not buying the vet, you know.
Exactly. So, yeah, we said to him, like, no, we can't afford to pay that. And they went, oh, but your cat's in such serious pain. And we went, well, you know what? We'll take her to another vet. And anyway, they still charged us £130 for keeping her in overnight.
So it was £130 I would have charged them just to do all the works. And they'd just keep them overnight for 130 quid. That's an expensive hotel room for a cat.
And the biggest con ever, Glenn, was that when we did take it to the second vet, they kept her in for a few days. And they were waiting for the original vet to send them the x-rays. And after a few phone calls back and forth, it turns out the original vet, the one that was charging us £2,000, hadn't taken any x-rays.
Oh.
And so I'm thinking they were going to charge us £2,000 because apparently the leg was shattered here, the leg was shattered there, and they hadn't taken any x-rays. And guess how much we got charged in the end, in the second vet?
How much?
£70.
That is just daylight robbery. I can't believe that. That's just emotional blackmail.
It certainly was, mate. But in the end, my cat didn't have like a completely shattered leg. It was a small fracture, which they didn't even have to operate. They just said, just keep her in a little cage for a few weeks, and she'll recover by herself.
Well, it also happened to my hamster. I had a hamster. And what you have to do with the cage, you have to, like, put the cage on top of the bottom.
Yeah.
And the hamster got his foot trapped.
Oh, no.
And it tripped up and it, you know, broke its leg.
Oh, crap.
And I took it to a vet, and do you know how much that cost?
Right, let me guess. £20?
£3.
£3? Wow.
£3. What they did, they just put the leg back together and sellotaped it.
Sellotaped?
You know, kind of put a bandage around it, like bandage.
Oh, wow.
He said, just keep that on as long as you can, and it'd be okay. And in about a week or so, it came off. The hamster teared it off, and he was okay then. He walked perfectly fine.
Oh, it's amazing. It's good stuff, man. What was your hamster's name, by the way?
Silky, I think.
Silky.
Silky. Oh.
Right, so anyway, rather than talking about our pets, let me quickly tell you one more thing before I ask you what you've been up to, Glenn. I have bought a house.
You bought a house. You see, that £2,000 would have gone towards a good mortgage.
Yeah, because we had to have at least £10,000 for the mortgage. And if without that £10,000, we wouldn't have... If we had paid £2,000 for the cat, there's no way we would have bought this house. But anyway, I sort of am a homeowner, you know, once all the paperwork goes through. But anyway, Glenn, what have you been up to then, buddy?
Well, what I've been up to yesterday, it was my friend's kid's birthday, and she's 2 years old.
Oh.
Oh, sweet little two-year-old. And one of my friends had bought a bear. Now, she's only 2 years old, so she doesn't talk very much.
Yeah.
She came over to this bear, and she went, "Hello, bear." So, yeah, I was around at a friend's house celebrating her birthday. I brought her a Peppa Pig.
Oh, did you have lots of jelly and ice cream and cake?
I had lots of sausage rolls and profitable rolls. And there was mini pizzas already for Towel. I took one mini pizza out, and there's Gina, you know, the mother, said, "Oh, that's for the guests later on." sorry about that. And something happened at Tesco. I'll quickly tell you this story.
Yeah, go for it.
There was this Pepsi on offer, and it was £1.
Right.
So, oh, God, that's good offer, you know, £1 for a 2-litre bottle of Pepsi. Got that, went to the till, paid for it, came out on the receipt as £1.79.
What?
So I think that is wrong. So I came up to the checkout, you know, the customer service, and I said, this is wrong. And he says, just show me what the price is. I took him to the Coke. I went, oh, sorry about that. Yeah, you're right. And took it. And he says, you get repaid, you get the item, and you get double the difference back.
Right.
So basically, I keep the Coke, and they give me my money back.
Really? Oh, wow.
So, got a bottle of Coke while it's free.
Hey, man, well done.
Because of a mistake they've done.
Fantastic, mate. Anything else you've been up to then? Anything you've been playing? Any retro games or anything?
Oh, I've been watching a film, Back to the Future, recently. Ah. One of my favourite films ever.
Oh, mate, I'm not going to delve too deep into that, for the reason is, next time, me and Phil are going to do a whole special thing about that. But quickly tell us in a few things why you like that film so much.
You know, what I love about that film so much, it's how the storyline is actually put together. You could tell that, was it Spielberg who made it? You could tell he put a lot of time into this film.
I think it was Rob Zemeckis and Steven Spielberg produced it, but I think it was Rob Zemeckis.
Yeah. It's really well done how they thought out what will happen if you change time, if you go and stop your mum and dad meeting, what will happen and what's the consequences of time travel and what's good about time travel. And there's loads of things I love about this film. It's like a love story. It's dramatic. It's everything put together. And do you know what? It's such a great film. My girlfriend hates it.
Oh, no. Really?
I said, we watched this film. It's a really good film. We sat down, watched it. And my girlfriend finished. She went round and said, that's one of the rubbishest films I ever watched. And I said, why? Why is it rubbish? It's one of the best films ever made on this planet.
Yeah.
And she went, well, it's a bit far-fetched, isn't it? A car that could travel in time. And I said, that's the whole point of it.
Exactly. But I'll tell you what, Glenn, you recently uploaded a video on the site, Back to the Future 3 on the Commodore 64.
Yeah. Out of all the Back to the Future games, that game, it wasn't too bad, but it was still not a very good game, despite of all that.
Because I recently commented on the Retro Asylum site where you actually put that in. And I remember on the ZX Spectrum, I got this demo of the game with one of the magazines. And it was there a level where you're in the town and you have to throw pies or something at each other.
Yeah, I actually saw a video, a long play video.
Yeah.
And it shows them complete the whole game. But I think there's only like three or four levels to it. But they made the level so hard that you can't complete it.
So the other thing I was going to ask you, you have been doing a bit more retro gaming, because last time I called you, I think, on Xbox, and you said, sorry, Andy, I've got to go. I've got to do a bit of a Bomberman.
Oh, yeah. I was around at a friend's house, and there was four of us, and we all played Bomberman. And do you know who was victorious? Me.
You did it. Oh, wow. Because normally you said someone's better than you.
Oh, not that time. My girlfriend almost beaten me, but I only just beaten her.
Is she a sore loser? Or
every time she loses on a game, she's like, oh, I don't like this game now. And when she wins, she goes, I love this game now. Oh, she's a great person to play games with because it's such a laugh. You know, she wants to win and I want to win. And there's that competition there that both of us wants to win.
So how many were you playing? Three of you, four of you? How many were playing the game?
There were four of us playing.
Oh, that's fantastic. I think Bomberman is one of those sort of games, Glenn, that you can really sort of, you need to play it in a group, you know?
Oh, I tell you, on that Bomberman, there's this bomb called the Dangerous Bomb.
Right.
And what I done, I picked up this Dangerous Bomb, and I went around and collected all the little fires, mm-hmm. you know, that expands your bomb.
Yeah.
And one of my friends were at the corner of the screen, and I just put a Dangerous Bomb down, and half the screen went kaboom and killed him.
I'm sure there was a while ago. Did I ever play you at Bomberman?
We both played it on Xbox Live.
Yeah, I mean, I think we got to the point where like the little blocks started appearing around because we were taking so long. Yeah. And what format had you played it originally when you first played Bomberman?
I think it was called something else, but I think I played it on Amiga, and I also played it on the Super Nintendo, but more so on the Super Nintendo.
Because, you know, it's also available on the Spectrum, but it's got a different name. I can't remember what it's called.
On the Amiga, I think it was a Bomberman, but it wasn't called Bomberman. But it looked like Bomberman.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I think it was just... I didn't really get into it until I got the Super Nintendo version, and then I was just hooked on it. And, like, now it's probably in my top 100 favourite games ever.
You know, it's one of the best multiplayer games ever for me. You know, if you want to play a quick game with your friends, probably Gears of War will take too long. But Bomberman, you could play it for half an hour and get a lot of enjoyment out of it because it's a good quick pick-up game, isn't it? It's not the hardest game to get into. That's what I like about it.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's an all-time classic. It's what I call a party game. There's certain games that you can play in with a group of friends. I'm trying to think of another example. Like Worms is another example where it's really easy to pick up when there's a few of you playing as well.
And Bubble Bobble.
Yep, that's another classic game as well.
We played that, and at the end, you know, you get a friendship achievement if everyone on the screen.
Yeah.
I do know one of us died, didn't it? After all those 100 levels, and it comes up saying, this is not the true ending, you need friendship. Something like that comes up at the end. I could have slammed that pad on the floor.
You know what would be nice if it did come out, and I hope that, you know, they do release it. Micro Machines, I think that would be fantastic on the Xbox.
That was fantastic on the Mega Drive.
Yeah. I think it was Micro Machines 2, wasn't it, Glenn? Which had two extra joypad ports on the actual cartridge itself. So you could play up to four players at the same time.
And that was pretty much unheard of at the time, isn't it? You know, you could play four players on a games console. All right, it's a norm today with after the N64, but we're talking about before the N64 here.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's just amazing. It was like, that was Codemasters that made that for you, so... you know, starting off from the little Speccy, they moved on to the 8-bit computers, the 16-bit. So they've really done well, and they're still going to this day, Codemasters. So good on them.
Anyway, should we get on to the retro news today?
Right, so we haven't got any music, Glenn, so you want to do some news music for us to introduce it?
Today's news. You know, all those American style.
All right, so do you want to do your first bit of news first?
Yeah, well, I'm really, really glad that this is going to come out. We recently heard about Daytona USA. It's going to come out on the Xbox 360, and it's going to be fully HD. It's going to have multiplayer, and I can't wait for that game. It's one of my favourite corner arcade games of all time.
I'm going to reply that. I'm going to quote Homer Simpson. Woohoo!
Yeah.
That's what Homer would say, because you know what? I'm completely in agreement with you, Glenn. I love this game. This game is fantastic. And we played this when we had our 1HMPS Retro meetup. We met up on the Trocadero, and we played this game. And like now, we can do it again in the comfort of our own home.
I know, it's great. I'm full HD.
Yeah, running at proper speed. And, I was talking to Tony about this, and apparently as well, it will have the original music as well.
Oh, that's great. I always like the Daytona USA music.
Yeah, so, like, you've got Daytona on one of your machines. And what machine have you got it, Glenn?
I've got three versions of Daytona USA. I got the original one on the Saturn. Then right. I think there was Daytona, I probably got this wrong, there was another Daytona released on the Sega Saturn, a better graphical version.
Right.
And then I got a Daytona USA 2001 on the Dreamcast.
Which one is more like the arcade?
The Dreamcast one.
Amazing. I've got that as well on my Dreamcast as well. And I think that was given to me by Malk. So, Malk, if you're listening to this, thank you very much for that, mate. And we'll catch up sometime on Xbox and play some Daytona. So how much do you reckon this will go for, Glenn?
Well, for Microsoft points?
Yeah.
I think they will do it for, so like 1,200 Microsoft points. Probably same as Comic Jumper.
Yeah, I think you're right. All right, so let me quickly tell you a little bit more gaming news. My gaming news is... Go on, you can do... Guardian Heroes is coming out on the Xbox 360. Now, Guardian Heroes was a classic beat-em-up that was... Was it on the Saturn, Glenn?
Yeah, well, I just researched it on the internet and it comes up Sega Saturn.
Yep, it was basically... It was a great little fighter, like scrolling beat-em-up. But it had, like, other things as well that you could do. You could power up every time, get some points and so on. And it just looked good. And I'll be honest with you guys, I hadn't played it up until today. It was always a game that I'd always wanted, but I couldn't get it on my Sega Saturn because back in the day, I got into an argument with my ex-girlfriend and she chucked it out the window.
Oh, that's cruel.
It is cruel, yeah. But I dumped her soon after that because, you know, I can't
have a girl
chucking my console. But yeah, Guardian Heroes, the demo is out on the Xbox 360. I think it's 1,200 points as well. It's one of the best scrolling beat-em-ups, apparently. I played the demo. The demo's really nice. And they've HD'd that up. Looks superb. Have you played this, Glenn, at all?
I only just researched it now, but is it on Xbox Live, you said? Check it out.
Check out the demo, yep. So, go on, do the little news music, and then you can do your next bit of news.
Okay, everybody. There's actually going to be, I think it's a Superboy SNES hand console. Well, it's going to cost $80. That's American money. I don't know how much it is in English money.
I would say about 60-ish pounds. If any of our listeners can correct me on that, I'm sure they will. Please let us know.
And it's going to have features like 5-hour battery lives, and it can play the Japanese and American cartridges. I think the biggest shame is it can't play the European cartridges. It just says PAL European cartridges are untested.
Right.
So that might be a problem if you import it. You may buy games here and it doesn't work.
Yeah. That's a real shame because it's always good to actually play from the actual cartridge. What does the actual handheld look like then, Glenn?
It actually looks really white and it's really round. It actually looks like a SNES pad almost, but with a games cartridge stuck on top. Now, if you want my advice about this, I think the closest thing to a Super Nintendo on a handheld, except this, is probably the Game Boy Advance. And you could pick those up for really cheap these days, and they released a lot of Super Nintendo games on the Game Boy Advance. If you want my advice, I'd probably say Game Boy Advance.
If you want my advice, you know what I'd say? Get yourself a PSP and emulate it.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. But anyway, now let's move on to our next bit of news. Is 1HMPS is no more.
Is it gone now?
Well, by the time this podcast, it will be. Because I think this podcast is going to come out sometime in November. If it comes out earlier, hey, if you didn't know, 1HMPS is going. Now, it's a sad thing because, you know, me and you, that's where we started podcasting together.
Yeah.
You know, on 1HMPS. And basically, I never did like the name 1HMPS. I don't know why on earth I chose the name 1 Hour Monthly Podcast Show. I think I chose it just to limit myself to 1 hour once a month. But then I started doing weekly podcasts. But it holds fond memories because we had a nice community there. And hopefully everyone from there will come down to the Retro Asylum. But we had some great times. We did some great podcasts. And I'll tell you what, my favorite podcast I ever did, I got the amazing chance to interview the wonderful Oliver twins.
Oh, yeah, the Oliver twins. Now, and another podcast I really liked, when Malcolm interviewed Steve Benway. That was a good one. That was a funny one.
That was absolutely fantastic. And I also liked the bit where you were talking about how characters in Street Fighter 2 were fisting each other.
I remember that. That was by accident saying that. Anyway, would all the old episodes still be somewhere?
Yep, you can find all the old episodes of 1HMPS Retro on iTunes. It will say 1HMPS Retro. And if you type it out on Google, you'll find them. They're stored in a place called Podomatic. And you can also find them at the Retro Asylum. Now, the next bit of news, Glenn, is the most important bit of news. By the time this podcast comes out, go on, a bit more news music.
Yeah. Well done, Sweeney.
Because he is getting married, or he is married now.
Congratulations, Sweeney.
Yeah, congratulations, Sweeney, and to your lovely wife. Wish you all the very, very best. So, Sweeney might not be in the podcast for a while. We might see it. Yeah, we will see him at Retro Replay, actually.
Oh, I can't wait to see. I haven't seen Sweeney in the flesh.
No? Oh, yeah, he didn't show up that day.
No,
did
he didn't show up, though. Yeah, so that's the first time I'll be seeing Sweeney.
Yeah, so anyway, congratulations, Sweeney. All the best, mate. You are now a married man.
Yep, you now have your ball and chain around your neck.
Oh, gosh.
I'm not quite there yet.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, are you going to get married?
Everyone asks me that. No, not yet.
Well, not yet, okay.
I think how things are going at the moment, we like things as they are, but you never know. Things are going nicely at the moment.
Okie dokie. So let's move on to our next section. Again, it's Retro Game of the Week. Now, again, we haven't got music for this. What shall we use? Shall we use something like Retro Game of the Week?
Ta-da!
You know what? I like that. I think we should record that and use it as a jingle whenever we do this podcast. Now, if it does sound like we're being a little bit more raw and spontaneous, that's the whole plan for this podcast. I'm not going to edit it so much. I'm not going to throw in so much music. It's just going to be a fun podcast where we can be silly, be serious, have fun, be stupid, just a combination of everything. But anyway, what is the Retro Game of the Week?
It's one of my favourite games ever, Resident Evil.
You should have said it like this, Glenn, like they do in the game. Resident Evil. You know, it's called Biohazard in Japan.
Yes, it's called Biohazard in Japan. Yeah.
Right, so anyway, I'm just nattering on now. Tell us why this game is super duper.
Well, what I absolutely love about this game is the way they put terror into the games. Mm. And the way they constructed the storyline, right? There was this house, it's in the middle of nowhere, there's been strange things going on, and they sent a team over there to investigate it. They haven't returned. So your job is to go over there and find out what's happened. And then when you got there, all hell broke loose. All the zombies and all the zombie dogs come after you, and you end up in this scary mansion.
Sorry, Glenn, I don't mean to interrupt you there, buddy, but you forgot one little thing.
What have I forgot?
You know the intro with the dogs and they're chasing you?
Yeah.
That was actual video footage, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, it was actually real video footage. Well, not it's actually zombies don't exist, but it was actually a movie-style set, isn't it? They've never done that in all the other Resident Evils. It was all CGI after that.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, maybe it was cheaper to do. Maybe you could do a lot more, because I think in real life, if you try and get a real movie set, maybe it's more expensive. But anyway, yeah.
Do you remember the intro? Chris Redfield, Jill Valentine. And it goes Barry Burton. And then goes Albert Wesker. And there he is playing with his hair. And it goes Resident Evil.
Right, so they walk into they get into the house. And what happens from there, Glenn?
Well, when they get into the house, they realised who's gone missing. Now, if you play as Jill, Chris goes missing. If you play as Chris, Jill goes missing. Now, if you play as Jill Valentine, Chris Redfield disappears. And if you play on Chris Redfield, Jill Valentine disappears.
Now, it's got some dodgy acting, hasn't it? Because one of my favourite lines is, Glenn, is, Jill, you are the master of key unlocking, well, something like that.
You, the master of unlocking, can take it with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. There's even cheesier than that.
Go on, man.
Jill, you are here too. Yes, I'm here too. Yeah, there was some cheesy acting in that game.
Was it cheesy back then, Glenn, when you first played it? Did you notice how cheesy it was? Or is it one of these things that's just aged badly?
It has aged badly, but at the time it was a really good game. But I think I didn't play it because of the acting.
Mm.
I played it because the thrill and the frights.
Yeah.
Now, I was 13 when I first played this game, and I wasn't really supposed to play this game as it is a 15.
Yeah.
Never mind, everyone does it. But what I love about this game is how things suddenly come out of nowhere. Like, you're walking down a corridor, and the corridor's silent. You may walk down it once, and it doesn't happen. But there's going to be an odd time when you walk down a corridor, and these dogs suddenly jump through the window and chase after you. And that's what I love about it. Things suddenly happen and things jump out and fright you.
I think that's what we're going to have to do, Glenn. And a later podcast, one day we'll do the top 10 jump out moments and again, well, we'll call it top 10 holy shit moments where something, you know, you don't expect it and it happens in a game. But that was a classic moment, Glenn. I nearly crapped my pants basically when that happens. But do you think the controls of Resident Evil added to the fear, because it doesn't control very well, because it controls like a tank, the characters, because you've got to walk back and forward to sort of, it doesn't feel right.
And when they turn around, it's not like turn around on the spot, but if you turn around in real life, that doesn't happen. But they did improve that on Resident Evil 2. It was a lot better control-wise.
So did you actually finish this game, Glenn?
Yes, I did. I actually finished this game. I actually finished it on the GameCube as well. On the GameCube version, it looks like almost Xbox 360 quality. It looks really, really good, the GameCube version, because they made a remake on the GameCube, and even some of the puzzles are different.
I've always wanted that version. I've never played it. I've seen it in magazines, but it looks awesome. I might get it at some point.
It is a different storyline, and it does almost look like the Xbox 360 quality. I know I keep saying that, but it really does look impressive. For GameCube.
Is it better than the original game? Would you say it's better than the original or not as good?
It was better than the original game because the voice acting was spot on.
Oh, you know what?
The voice acting was a lot more realistic, a lot more fluent, and instead of going, Barry, where's Barry? They go, Barry, where's Barry? Look, a lot more realistic, you know.
That didn't sound very realistic.
You know, it was a lot more fluent, soul put into it.
You know what? If this game ever comes out on the Xbox 360, I think it should have a mode where you can still have the old voice acting with modern graphics or the more modern voice acting. I think that would be good.
I'd go for the more modern one, more realistic.
I love the cheesy acting in Resident Evil. It just gave it so much character.
Yeah.
So anything else you want to tell us about this game, Glenn?
Do you remember the gun? When you walk into a room, you pick up the broken shotgun, then suddenly you walk out the room and the roof starts to collapse on top of you.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that? And if you play as Chris Redfield, you can't get out. But if you play as Jill, hang in there, and Barry gets you out.
Yeah. I think when that started happening to me, what I had to do, I accidentally sort of, I think I'd saved that a little bit beforehand, and then I quickly turned off the PlayStation because I thought, no, I'm not going to die. And then I realized that, no, it does work its way into a cutscene where you do get rescued.
Yeah. If you play as Chris Redfield, you get squashed.
I think that one of the other things I remember about in the game was, like, because I always played it as Chris Redfield, I think when I first walked into the other room, I started exploring, and then this, you see, you walk into another little room just to the side, and that's where you first encounter the first zombie, because he's on the floor, I think, eating someone.
Yeah, he is.
And then he gets up.
Now, you should have played as Jill Valentine, because she's actually a lot easier to play with.
Is she?
Well, sounds a bit wrong, isn't it? Yeah, she's, because she can unpick doors.
Yeah.
Chris Redfield can't. And also, she has Berry.
Yeah.
But Chris Redfield has, like, a girl that meets on later on. What's her name? Rebecca Chambers. That's her name.
All right, okay.
Hey, how far do you actually get into this game?
I got as far, I think, some sort of giant spider or a boulder or something.
Oh, you did? Did you leave the mansion at all?
I think I ended up going into some sort of garden and ended up walking along and ended up going up this, like, stairs to like a loft or something, and then something came down and killed me.
Is it full of bees?
No, I'm sure it was a spider, but I lost patience with the game, and I just thought, I'm not playing this anymore.
Dude, I was when you were like 13 years old, you don't have a lot of money, can't afford to keep buying new games, so what I tend to do is play a game and complete it. But I did cheat a little bit. I picked up computer and video games, and this was before YouTube. This was before the internet established itself in the world. And I didn't know how to do something. And there was a question in the computer video games magazine asking this bit I was stuck on. And he goes, to do this. And that was the last bit of the game, basically.
I've got a confession for you as well. Resident Evil 2, I won't talk too much more about this, but yeah, Resident Evil 2, one of my friends came over to my house one day, and I just got this game, and we were trying to figure out what to do, and he's like, look, it's actually in this magazine, the walkthrough, shall I read it out, and then you can control the character? And that's exactly what we did. He just told me exactly what to do, what to pick up, how to solve the puzzles.
Andy, that Resident Evil 2 was the easiest Resident Evil. I did that game in about 2 days.
Now, I'd say the easiest one is part 3.
That
part
was 3. Easy.
Yeah, part 3, because part 1 and 2, I think you had to go back and forth, left, right, go upstairs, collect this, go back. And it was all over the place. But Resident Evil 3 started straying from that. Resident Evil 3 was, you keep on going one direction, and that was it. But yeah, okay, we're going to round this section up, Glenn, but what we're going to say is you can find Resident Evil 4 on the Xbox 360, and you can also find Resident Evil Code Veronica on the Xbox 360. Have you played Code Veronica, Glenn?
I played Code Veronica, and strange enough, I have not completed that one.
I think it's something you should do, mate, because I will do once I get the chance.
And also, there's Resident Evil 5 on the Xbox 360 and PS3, but I think that wasn't as good.
No, I thought that was rubbish.
But we'll talk about that another time.
Yeah, we will do. Right, so let's move on to our next section, is Music of the Week. Now, Glenn, the way this Music of the Week is going to work, every time this podcast is going to come up, we want to ask the community out there, our listeners and people at the Retro Asylum site, what their request is. So you guys can request it. And what I want from you is, like, tell us, like, why you like the music. You know, what made you think, wow, this is amazing? You know, so today's Music of the Week is going to be a track from Last Ninja 2 on the C64.
fantastic game on the Commodore 64, and also had a lot of great music as well, especially when it was loading. The loading music on that game was fantastic, especially on Last Ninja 2 when you load up the first level. It does give it some character, the game.
Because that's one game, although I had a C64, I didn't actually own the game. This was a game that I actually played on my, my cousin's C64. So I actually played the poorer, inferior version that was a ZX Spectrum, which had rubbish music, you know. But anyway, that was fantastic music in Last Ninja 2. So guys, please give us some more of your requests. So what is our next section then, Glenn?
Well, our next section is Topic of the Month. And the topic of the month is the console of the month. And we're going to talk about the good old N64.
Woohoo!
So yeah, the Nintendo 64. It was one of these games consoles that was revolutionary in itself. Like, the Mario 64 first appeared on it. That's a game that everyone played and liked. And there was... they also had the first console, as I know, to have four controller ports.
Correct, yeah, definitely.
And, far as I know, it was one of the first consoles to have, like, a joystick actually on the pad itself.
Yeah, it was like the analog stick. I think it was one of the first... Was it the first console to have an analog?
I have no idea. I can't confirm that.
So what was the first game you played on the N64?
Super Mario 64.
Absolute classic. One of my favourite games ever. I still play it to this day, Glenn. Did you ever finish that?
I never finished that game, but got quite into that game. It's annoying finding all the stars, though.
Oh, I cheated on that as well. I had a little book. I spent a whole weekend finishing it, collecting all the extra little coins as well. But yeah, tell us more about the machine's specs then, Glenn. Do you know anything about that?
Well, it was one of the first machines, as far as I know, to have it's like a 3D accelerator, 3D effects kind of graphics. Like the Sony PlayStation didn't have a 3D effects kind of graphics.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of the first games consoles to have that. Also, it's one of the last games consoles I know to have game cartridges.
Oh, yeah.
Because all the other Nintendos after that all had CDs, like the GameCube had CDs and the Wii today has CDs. So it was the last Nintendo to have CDs.
Why did they go for that? Sorry, Glenn.
Piracy issues. Because CDs, it's a lot easier to pirate. But I suppose that's a backlash because people don't want to pay 70, 50 quid for a game. I remember when the games first came out on the N64. And remember, I was at school. I was in year 8 when this came out. And I remember looking at the N64, I think, God, fantastic. You know, I want one of these. And saw the game price. He went, nah, I'd rather not.
Right. I don't know if I've told you this little story, Glenn, but I got it when it first came out. I even reserved it, I think, at HMV. And I ended up getting it for £250.
Yeah. And it was on Watchdog, I think, because they lowered it to, I think, 150 a few months later.
Yeah, I think it was about a month and a bit later. I was so upset, Glenn. I was so upset. So I think when I got it, I got myself, I think the four launch games that were there, I got myself Super Mario 64, Star Wars, Shadows of the Empire, what was the other one? The other one was Turok, Dinosaur Hunter, and I can't remember what the other one was, but I thought it was phenomenal, Glenn.
It was phenomenal at the time. I thought the N64 was absolutely fantastic, but my mum and dad didn't want to buy me one because, it's not educational. So my mum bought me a PC, with this PC, it had a 3DFX card inside. Yeah. You know, later on, I put a 3DFX card and some more memory inside, and it blew the N64 out of the water.
Yeah.
The graphics looked like N64, but it wasn't as blurry, and Turok had a better drawing distance.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. So a lot of the N64 games, Glenn, you're right, like especially like Turok, they used the fogging effects to mask that, didn't they?
Yeah, because what will happen if they don't put fog in is things will just pop up everywhere and it will look a bit dodgy. So they put a fog down so it pops up, but you don't realise it's popped up.
Yeah, I was expecting a little bit more from the N64. I wasn't expecting that. I expected that from a 32-bit machine, but not from a 64-bit machine. Because I remember even when I was playing Mario 64, in the distance, certain things would just suddenly appear, and I'd be like, hold a second, that wasn't there, that's not quite right.
Yeah, things pop up. If that doesn't happen, what it would do eventually slow down the game.
But it did it did have some amazing games, though, Glenn. Absolute classics that still to this day are amazing, like Legend of Zelda, Ocarina of Time, Mario Kart 64, F-Zero, you know?
Mario Kart 64 was really good. I did like the Super Nintendo version. That's the original version I played. But I also loved the N64 version, especially the one you on like a motorway track. You had to avoid these great big lorries, oversized lorries everywhere. Do you remember that track?
Yeah, and once you finish the game and you get 150, whatever, well, you know, you get do all the 150 CCs, you get the mirror mode, where basically you get to race the same thing but going the other way. So in that motorway level, all the trucks and cars are coming towards you.
Yeah, it was a fantastic games console.
What were your two favourite games? Okay, top three games in Glenn, in no particular order.
Oh, well, I would say probably number three. I did like Turok.
Mm-hmm. Great game.
And number two, I'll probably say Mario 64.
Yeah.
And number one, it's got to be Super Mario Kart 64.
Really? Wow. So it's a good game. A lot of people think the Super Nintendo version's better, but I prefer the N64. I found it easier, more enjoyable, four player at the same time. Okay, my list, I'm going to choose different games that you didn't pick. Number three, I would say F-Zero X, whatever it was called. Classic game. Simple graphics, but ultra fast. It did everything that the Super Nintendo version did, but a lot better, I thought.
Well, it was a lot more powerful, Andy.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, the whole gameplay element was there. Okay, at number two, I would probably go for Mario 64. It basically redefined 3D gaming and 3D platforming, and I don't think it's been bettered, really, apart if you count the newer Mario games on the Wii. And at number one, I would have to choose Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask, which was phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal.
You see, I liked the Nintendo 64, but the Sony PlayStation did have better games overall. I think it had better third-party support.
Yeah.
It also had more, because by that time, by the N64 came out, I was getting here 13, 14. I didn't want to play cuddly bears running around, jumping on top of each other. I'd be want to shoot some zombies.
Exactly.
I think the PlayStation and the PC, because I was a PC gamer then, was more appealing to me because it had
Sony
the more violent games.
Yeah, I think Sony did the right thing with that. They marketed it so well because Nintendo were very family-friendly orientated. And, you know, Sony were cool, you know, you had these sort of like Wipeout 2099, and it had music from The Prodigy and all those other bands. It was hard-hitting, it was flashy. You didn't have like A, B, and C, you had X, Square, Diamond, and Circle. It was just, and it was cheaper, you know, to buy games, so it was better for everyone. And you got some good arcade conversions, which the N64 didn't have, but I tell you what, I still love the N64, classic console. And I need to get myself one, I think.
Oh, you've got to get yourself an N64 at the game show when we go there, the retro replay.
I might do, but, you know, I've got to hide it from my wife because we're buying a house as well, and I'm buying myself an N64. But
well, tell her she can buy something she likes.
Oh, no, I won't tell her that.
You buy something you like.
She'll probably end up buying God knows whatever she wants. It's like costs loads of money. But anyway, let's wrap up that section. Let's move on to our new section is... It's called Sequels That Should Have Been Made.
Oh, so what kind of sequel would you like to be made but wasn't made?
Right, so Glenn, why don't you go first and tell us what sequel should have been made?
Well, this particular game, every time I ask somebody, do you know this game? They go, what are you talking about? I've never heard of this game. And even Andy didn't know this game. He's the master of retro games.
I'm not really. I just Google everything.
Kamikaze on the C64.
Right. Now, like you said, never heard of it, Glenn. Tell us all about it.
Now, the main mission about this game, you're this crazy man with this aeroplane. And your mission is to fly this aeroplane, fly to the end of the level, and you've got to fire at a plane that holds a bomb, a grenade. You collect the grenade, and you throw it down on the gate, and when the gate blows up, you get these people come out. Now, your objective is to rescue the people and bring them back to base. It sounds easy, but it's hard. because you've got UFOs flying everywhere after you. You've got the Concorde flying above you, a black Concorde flying. Right. And you also had the army running on the bottom with tanks and stuff trying to fire at you. And trust me, that tank is annoying because you could fly in that aeroplane and suddenly a tank fires a grenade at you, or a bomb or grenade at you, and it just blows up your helicopter, well, not helicopter, your plane, and it falls down and smashes on the ground.
Who originally made this game, Glenn? How much, you know?
It was released by Codemasters.
Oh, really? Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I don't know who made it, but Codemasters released it, and it did have some... the music was really good. It had a right beat to it. It went dum da dum da 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 da. If you want to listen to the full tune, that is actually on YouTube.
Right, fantastic. I mean, what I might do, Glenn, I might try and check it out on the Spectrum once we finish the podcast. But yeah, tell us, why does this game need a sequel, and how would you have done the sequel if you could make one? How would you do it?
How would I do it? Well, I like to bring it on the Xbox 360, and I don't like it to be in 3D. I like it to be like 2D, but polished to HD. Graphics, you know, it's really 2D cartoonish, but it's like it's really polished and really crystal clear. And I'll make it more or less the same as it was on the C64 because it was really a fun game. It was.
What would you add to it? Would you make it a two-player? Would you make it like a? What other things could you add to the first game that would make it so much better?
What I do, I'll make it as a two-player co-op. And what you have to do, you have these two planes, and they've got to fight against each other to get to the rescue first, pick up the people rescue and get back, and the one that takes the people back first is the winner.
Yeah, that sounds like, it would have been a fantastic sequel if it had been made.
Yeah.
What other things, though, what would the subtitle of the thing be called? It would have been called Kamikaze 2. Like what?
Oh, it'd be Kamikaze 2 HD.
Hey, why not?
Actually, that probably gives me an idea. I got the games maker. I could do that one day.
That's absolutely fantastic. I think you should, once you finish your Dizzy game, do Kamikaze 2. That would be amazing, mate. All right, let me tell you what my sequel that should have been made. Mine is an official sequel to Target Renegade 2. Now, everyone knows that Target Renegade was the sequel to Renegade that appeared on the 8-bit computers. Now, there was a third game in the series, which was Renegade 3. And Glenn, you know what that game was like, don't you?
It was basically Dinosaur Age. What are they thinking? What's some fighters doing in Dinosaur Age?
Yeah, I think it was just awful. I think they thought, we can make a sequel. Let's just
put a bit of dinosaurs here.
Yeah, but you know what I would have done, Glenn? First of all, I wouldn't have called it Renegade 3. I would have called it Target Renegade 2. Now, I would have kept the game overall exactly the same thing, maybe 6 levels, and I would have set them in different environments. Now, maybe I would have set one like in a big office building, and you have to fight your way through the office until you get to the top, to the top floor. So you start at the bottom, and you're fighting against sort of guys in suits, like mafia guys. And I think the story would have been is like maybe someone gets killed in your family, and you would have had the same sort of moves, but more,
How would you make the game? Would you make it into a cartoony game, or would you make it into a full-fledged 3D?
Not at all, Glenn. I would, if I knew, how to make games, I would make it just on the ZX Spectrum.
Just on the ZX Spectrum. Yep, the trouble is making on the ZX Spectrum is that you have a lot of limitations.
No, I know, but I mean, if you think about it, though, if you look at the original game, all you have to do, Glenn, is change the backgrounds, just modify the sprites, and put in new music. So you've got exactly the same game, and all you do is just change a move here and there. So, and that's what we all really wanted back in the day, Glenn. We just wanted the same game, a few different things, and we would have been happy with that. But what we got given was Renegade 3,
Chuck Rock Renegade, they should have called it.
Oh, no. They should have called it Renegade 3. They shouldn't have bothered. That's what they should have called it. But yeah, that's what I would have liked to have done. If I could make games, I'd make Target Renegade 2, new backgrounds, better sprites, a few new moves, and yeah, that would have been that's what I would have done.
I think the best thing to do is rehash it and make it into a HD kind of game, and you know, into 2D kind of game. I think I like how people could still make games on the Commodore 64 and ZX Spectrum, but it must be sheer hard work and very limited to what you could do because the hardware.
But I think it's just like, you know, like it's like Sweeney. Sweeney is such a big fan of the original Double Dragon, and you know, he's done the graphics for the, because you know, he's doing a remake for the Spectrum game.
Oh yeah.
And that's we're going to see that at Replay Expo.
Oh, is it? You know, is it ready?
He said he's not too sure whether it's going to be running or whether it's just going to be a demo, but you know, it should be interesting to see how that turns out. So yeah, I'd keep my remake as like a ZX Spectrum. Wouldn't put it on the Xbox. Wouldn't put it on anything modern. It would be on the ZX Spectrum or maybe on the PC, but with Spectrum type graphics. In that case. That. Right, so let's move on to our next section, Glenn.
The Commodore 64, now in a home family pack. A family pack containing the world's number one selling home computer, a data cassette and joystick, a comprehensive teach-yourself program, plus three additional software packages. The Commodore family pack, now available from your Commodore dealers and major retail stores. Now that's value for money. Are you keeping up with the Commodore?
We've got a section called Knowing Me, Knowing You.
Oh, Knowing You.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I've nicked that from Alan Partridge.
And also, is that also, is it ABBA song, Knowing Me, Knowing You?
Uh-huh. that's the Alan Partridge. Yeah, but yeah, it is an ABBA song. Maybe I should have that as the music for this part. Right, so let me tell you what this part's all about. Now, I asked Glenn a question, and Glenn then asked me a question, but we both get to answer the question that the other person has asked as well. And this is like a Q&A section, but because this podcast is relatively new, we haven't got any Q&A questions, so I've created this instead. So Glenn, ask me a question, please, so we get to know each other a little bit more.
If you can get your hands on a time machine and you could go back to any time in history, where would you go back to?
I would time travel back in my DeLorean at 88 miles per hour to the prehistoric times when there was dinosaurs.
Why would you go back to the dinosaur age?
I love dinosaurs. I love sort of Jurassic Park. I love like the old sort of Ray Harryhausen movies with dinosaurs. They were just fantastic creatures, and we will never really know what they looked like. Sure, you can put the skeleton back together and speculate how they walked, how they moved, how they acted, but I think I want to see what Earth used to be like before, you know, technology and more modern animals. I want to see like a T-Rex. Obviously, I don't want to get close to one, but I want to see like a, you know, a Brontosaurus. I want to see all these amazing creatures. That's what I would do. What would you do then, Glenn?
Well, where would I go back to?
Yeah.
Oh, if I had a time machine. Did I would like to have, like, go back in time and visit Titanic. Because I've always been interested in the Titanic, this boat, the Titanic, and I would not want to be on it when it sinks.
But I was going to say, that's not very good. Glenn, you want to travel back to the Titanic and you'd be like, oh, crap, I forgot it sinks.
Yeah, well, I like to travel back to it before it sinks and have a nice look around, because this ship is well known to be unsinkable.
Yeah.
But it sank on its maiden voyage.
I know.
And I'd just like to have a look around and see what the original ship looks like. You know, well, all right, we had photographs and stuff of it, but I like to see the real thing.
Oh, you know what you should have done, Glenn? You should have gone to the O2 exhibition they had of Titanic in London. They had, like replica things from the Titanic.
Oh, very nice. And
yeah, that was, like, about, what, last year, I think. It's a shame you would have enjoyed that.
Oh, I would have loved that.
Yeah. So, yeah, you would have gone back to the Titanic then.
Well, before it sank, probably a day before it sank. And have a look around first class, second class, and look around Captain Smith's cabin, you know, go around the docks and stuff. I would love to do that. And also, I like to travel back to the 1980s and have a look around the decade I was born.
And then maybe, I don't know, tell Glenn, young Glenn, teach him a few things. Say, like, you know, one day you will be on a podcast. You have that to look forward to, Glenn.
And I will say, what's a podcast? Well, a radio show.
But you'd probably be scared of yourself because you were scared of everything back then, weren't you?
Yeah, I was. Oh, remember, I was very young.
All right, mate. So, yeah, more knowing me, knowing you next time we do the podcast. All right. So now it's time for, go on, Glenn, you know what time it is
retro
now.
Retro Babe of the Month. Woo, woo.
Right. So who is our retro babe?
It's Chun-Li of Street Fighter.
Yeah. Now, I'm the one who chose her this time, but I'll tell you the reason why I've chosen her, Glenn. Because I used to fancy her a lot, you know, when I used first started playing Street Fighter 2. She just had these amazing legs and, like, nice breasts.
And nice long legs. Nice tights.
Nice long legs. Exactly. And I always used to love it when she used to do the spinning bird kick.
Yeah.
Because she'd turn upside down and you'd be like, wow, you can almost see something there.
She's trying to pause the game while she was doing that.
But no, I think she was a beautiful character, absolutely, like, gorgeous in the game, especially when you see some of the artists do some artwork of her. And she's a strong character. What was the story behind Chun-Li? Wasn't it her father had been killed by M. Bison?
Now, I'm not sure about that, but I like Chun-Li.
Yeah, great character, beautiful, strong, powerful, got some great, amazing moves. And I think when this podcast does come out, I'll post the picture as Retro Babe, and it'll be a nice big picture of Chun-Li. And maybe a little written thing about her as well. So, yeah, Glenn, let's start wrapping this podcast up. So, first of all, let's tell people where they can find us. If you haven't seen the site before and you're just listening to us on from iTunes or your MP3 player or whatever, you can find us at retroasylum.com. You can also find us on Twitter as retroasylum. You can also find us on iTunes, and please, if you do find us on iTunes, it would be really nice, it would make me feel amazing if you gave us a nice iTunes review. So, would you like to say any big thanks to anyone, Glenn?
Well, I'd like to say thank you to Andy for inviting me on this new podcast, Ritual Asylum, and I'd like to thank everybody for listening to us and, supporting us. And I'm looking forward, if I see you, to see you all at the at the meetup next month at Blackpool.
That'll be fantastic, Glenn. I'm looking forward to it. Let me quickly say a few thank you. I'd like to thank you, Glenn, as well. I'd like to thank Swainy. I'd like to thank Tony. I'd like to thank Malk. I'd like to thank everyone that supported the 1HMPS Retro. And guys, please make your way down to the Retro Asylum and become a retromaniac. And yeah, thanks for listening. And to play us out, I'm going to play an orchestrated version of Rastan. And I can't remember who basically wrote this music, but it's absolutely phenomenal. Enjoy it. Have a wonderful day.
Yeah, and we will see you next time, everybody. Take care of yourselves, and we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Agrimna nausteus.